to the forest. We move a few miles down the road and take another break before pushing through to Fort Covenant.
Yes, sir, Tiro said. I wouldn't stay a minute longer if I thought I could avoid it, but as you've rightly pointed out, our boys are almost blown.
Tevis and Hollock stepped out of the headquarters behind them.
Steiger, Tevis said. I will have my dispatch ready to...
Rider approaching!
A shout rang out from the platform above the gate. All heads turned.
From which direction?
Steiger shouted back up and started making his way toward the gate. He suspected he knew the answer to his own question. The others followed.
North, sir,
the man called back, bringing Steiger to a stop in his tracks.
And he is riding hard.
That would be one of our scouts, sir.
Tiro threw a look of concern at Steiger. Steiger's eyes connected with Tevis's. He held the other officer's gaze a hard moment before turning away. Steiger hurriedly made his way through the gate. What he had taken for a small wood had proven to be a good-sized forest. Ida had been cut out of the forest and sat astride the road. Unlike other forts that Steiger had come across, there was no civilian village or town here. Steiger figured it was probably due to Ida's remoteness. The trees around the fort had been pushed back 600 yards in every direction. Low-lying scrub and brush choked the cleared fields. From the height of the vegetation, Steiger suspected the auxiliaries regularly pruned it down, but the forest was relentless. It sought to reclaim the land it had lost. Should the auxiliaries pack up and one day leave, Steiger had no doubts that within a handful of years Ida would be fully overgrown. Steiger's column of men, mules, and horses was lounging about, enjoying the respite. Under the afternoon sun and without shade, they fairly boiled in their armor. Discomfort was something anyone serving in the legions rapidly became accustomed to. Steiger's gaze shifted to the rider. He saw it was Asus, as Hollocks, Tevis, Tiro, and Pazulo stepped up next to him. Steiger searched for his other scout. Tig was nowhere to be seen. Asus's horse was lathered with sweat and kicking up great clods of dirt. Asus yanked hard on the reins, pulling his horse up just short of the officers. The animal's breathing was heavy and labored.
Sir,
Asus slid off his horse and offered a salute. Steiger returned the salute.
Let's have it.
Enemy, sir. Heavy infantry, along with a good-sized column of cavalry coming down the road.
Asus gestured behind him. They are 4, maybe 3 miles away by now. Tig is staying just ahead of their advanced scouts. I told him not to take any chances, and ride back here direct-like should he get spotted.
You are certain you saw heavy infantry?
Steiger had hoped the enemy's main body was farther away. A cavalry regiment was bad enough, but this was even worse. The rain and fire had apparently not slowed the enemy up much.
Yes, sir, Asus said.
Tig and I were able to hide in the trees, eyeballing them good, and then were able to work our way around to get ahead of them. Once on the road, I came straight back, sir.
Steiger rubbed at his tired eyes. There would be no rest. It was time to push onward.
Sergeant Tiro, Sergeant Pazulo, Steiger rounded on them. Get the men on their feet.
Yes, sir,
Tiro said, moving toward the men.
Fall in!
Let's go, you maggots,
Pazulo roared, striding forward like a human hurricane.
Time for another pleasant walk through the woods, ladies.
You're leaving?
Steiger looked at Tevis, who had paled considerably.
I am certainly not staying.
But you will be leaving us to the enemy, Tevis said, apparently aghast at the concept.
And you, sir, Steiger said, sucking in a heavy breath, made clear your intention of remaining to hold the fort. Now I dare say you will have that chance.
Tevis looked away, eyes searching the forest to the north, almost as if he expected the army to emerge from the trees. After a moment, he drew himself up and looked Steiger square in the eyes.
I will hold my fort, but I will also send a messenger to Fort Covenant.
You do that, Steiger said, and then softened his tone. Maybe there is still time.
I wish you luck, Steiger, Tiva said, a grim look coming over his face.
He extended his hand. Steiger took Tiva's hand and shook firmly.
Don't do this, Hollock said as he took Tevis's hand.
I have to.
Fight well, Steiger said.
Tevis gave a curt nod, spun on his heel, and re-entered the fort.
They will surely die.
Hollock said with exasperation. This is utter madness.
Yes, Steiger said, feeling weary and sick at heart as he looked over the walls of the fort.
Make them come with us, Hollock said, and it almost came out in a pleading tone. When Steiger failed to respond, Hollock reached out and grabbed Steiger's shoulder, spinning him around so they faced one another.
We can't leave them.
We can and will, Steiger said. Tevis has made his choice. We've made ours.
But their sacrifice is meaningless, Hollock said in a near whisper. They will die for nothing.
Steiger turned back to the wooden fort, where he could now hear someone shouting orders from within.
Perhaps not so meaningless, Steiger said.
What do you mean?
Well, Steiger said, Tevis means to hold, and I have to believe that should delay any pursuit.
Hollock shifted his gaze onto the fort.
You mean he and his men will sacrifice themselves for us?
Yes, in a way they will, Steiger said, and looked on Hollocks.
Our escape shall only prove temporary, for the enemy will catch up to us. Whether that is somewhere on the road or at Fort Covenant, there are hard times ahead.
The men had fallen in and were ready to march. They were exhausted and covered with dirt from the road, but they were ready to move out.
Tiro, Steiger called and drew the sergeant's attention. Give the order.
Forward march!
The column began to move, the front at first, and then, like a snake, the middle of the column. The sound of many feet on the sun-dried dirt of the road was almost rhythmic. An auxiliary leading Hollux's horse made his way over. Hollux glanced once at Steiger, chewed his lip, and then looked back to the auxiliary.
I think I shall walk for a bit, Hollux said to the startled man. I will call you when I have need of you.
Yes, sir. The auxiliary led the horse back to the column, which was mostly moving now.
Steiger smiled grimly at Hollux, who returned his gaze.
I would like to march with you, Hollux said. If you don't mind, that is.
Your company on the miles ahead is welcome, Steiger said, and he meant it.
I can promise you one thing, though.
What is that?
Tonight, your legs will be sore, not your ass.
Chapter 12
I believe I have come to the conclusion that marching is not all that fun, Hollock said by Steiger's side. They were marching in the middle of the column as it snaked its way through the forest. It was late afternoon. Under the thick canopy of leaves, the heat of the day was kept at bay somewhat. Still, the high temperature along with the humidity could almost be described as oppressive. Steiger was looking forward to the cooler temperatures that would come with nightfall.
You can say that again. The exertion from the march and the heat had Steiger sweating heavily. He unclipped his canteen, which was beginning to run low again, and took a quick swig of warm water.
I don't think truer words were ever said.
Ah, come on, sir, Tiro said, a few steps behind them. Marching is good for the Constitution.
Spoken like a true sergeant, Steiger said, noticing Hollux's surprised expression.
Thank you, sir,
Tiro said, somehow managing to sound upbeat.
I've heard it said marching builds character, sir.
Are you implying I lack character? Steiger said, without giving the wily old sergeant the courtesy of a glance backward.
Oh, no, sir, Tiro said. I would never say that, sir. It's just that the Holy Scriptures teach there is room for improvement.
Steiger actually stopped at that and half turned to face Tiro, who returned his look with one of innocent equanimity.
That is the first I ever heard you directly refer to Scripture.
Steiger resumed his pace, as did Tiro.
Being pursued by an entire army gets one thinking on the gods, sir, Tiro said. Especially with you in command, sir.
Steiger chuckled at that. Tiro was teasing him. It was a game they routinely played. And yet, from Hollux's stiffened posture, Steiger sensed he was scandalized by the exchange. Steiger let out a slow breath. Hollux did not understand that banter like this helped pass the monotony. It was time to end the game before Hollux said something unfortunate.
Sergeant, shouldn't you be checking on the rear of the column?
Steiger turned slightly so that Tiro could see his face and jerked his head toward the back.
Aye, sir,
Tiro said, picking up on cue.
He stepped to the side and allowed the men to continue by, thereby giving the two officers space.
Steiger and Hollux marched in silence for some time. Hollux had his jaw set in a manner that suggested he was put out. Steiger considered his options. Perhaps there was an opportunity here, he thought. Would Hollux be open to listening? He was an old dog, in a manner of speaking. Could he learn something new?
He's right, you know, Steiger said, casting the other aside long glance.
Your sergeant is impudent, Hollux countered. He's very insolent.
Maybe, Steiger said, but I wouldn't change or trade him for any other.
Why ever not? A sergeant should be subservient. If Pazulo spoke to me in such a manner, by the gods I would have him flogged.
If you did, Steiger said, you'd be making a mistake.
How so?
Hollux turned skeptical.
I've learned that a good sergeant is worth his weight in gold, Steiger said. You have to begin thinking of them differently. Sergeants like ours are seasoned men who have been promoted for their intelligence, dedication, reliability, and aggressive nature.
Bah, Hollux said. You don't know what you're talking about. They're little more than uneducated louts that require their betters to keep them in place.
Are they? Steiger asked. Really, Tira may be uneducated by our standards, but that makes him no less intelligent or capable.
Steiger pointed ahead. Take your man Pazulo there. I am confident he has much to teach you. I am sure he could even show me a thing or two.
What can he teach me that I don't already know?
Steiger allowed a moment of silence to grow before he replied.
That man that you so casually dismiss has a lifetime of experience behind him, Steiger said. He's likely been in more fights than either of us, perhaps even a real battle or two. I'd wager he has been marching under the eagles since before I was even born. Is it possible he has seen and done things you and I have never considered?
Hollux frowned. Listen to me on this, and believe me. I once thought as you. Your sergeant isn't meant to act simply as a middleman for dealing with your men, Steiger continued. He's there to provide you his insight and advice on how to better handle them, and to ensure that your orders are carried out as best as possible. Good sergeants should act as a crutch, someone to lean on under difficult circumstances, such as in the heat of combat.
Steiger jerked a thumb behind them. Tira has proven incredibly valuable. I permit him liberties because he has earned my trust and respect. And more importantly, I have earned his.
Hollux's eyes narrowed, but he said nothing.
Trust goes both ways.
Steiger wondered if he was getting through to the man.
Without Tiro, I would not be the officer I am today.
Hollux threw Steiger a sharp look. They continued on for a bit, neither saying anything. Steiger allowed Hollux to ruminate on what he had just said. Hollux nodded several times. He opened his mouth to speak, and then closed it, his eyes traveling to Pazulo, marching several yards ahead.
Hollux hesitated. I've never thought of it that way.
Neither had I, Steiger said, until Tiro opened my eyes.
You are saying that on occasion I should seek my sergeant's advice?
It seems so unnatural.
It doesn't hurt to listen. You may find yourself a more effective officer for it, Steiger said. The final decision always rests with you. If you judge the advice sound, act upon it.
Make way! Tiro shouted from behind. Move aside, man! Make way!
Both Steiger and Hollux turned. Steiger felt his stomach do a backflip. With men stepping out of the way, Tiro jogged back up to him. Legionary Tig, one of their mounted scouts, rode forward just behind Tiro. He would not have returned unless there was trouble. Tig dismounted and offered a salute.
Report, Steiger said, dreading what was coming.
Cavalry, sir, Tig said, about a mile behind us. When I last saw them, they was walking their horses. They seemed to be giving their horses a break.
By the gods, so close,
Hollux breathed.
How many? Steiger asked.
No more than a light troop, sir. 20 at most, but I think they number less.
Were you spotted?
No, sir, Tig said. I was careful-like.
Steiger had to assume these were scouts. He had no idea how far back the enemy regiment was, and he could not dare assume that they were still at Ida.
Steiger studied the terrain around them. Where he was now, the road climbed a small forested hill and snaked its way around the side. 20 yards to the rear was a sharp bend that the column was still working its way around. Without orders to stop, the column of men continued by, though all eyes were on the officers as they passed.
Steiger scanned both sides of the road
and found there was a good deal of brush that might act as cover. A plan of action was forming in his mind. Steiger stepped across the road and looked down the slope. It was fairly steep, easy for a man, but it would prove incredibly difficult for a horse. After a moment more of studying their surroundings, he decided it suited his needs. He returned to Hollocks and Tiro. Varys and Pazulo joined them.
"What are you thinking, sir?" Tiro asked.
"How far do you think we are from Fort Covenant?" Steiger asked Hollocks.
"Maybe 4 miles,"
Hollocks said.
"It is hard to be sure. I only come through this way once a year, to meet with the Tribune who commands the auxiliary cohorts and forts. I can't imagine it is much farther."
"Right," Steiger said. "Tiro, call a halt. I've decided we're going to hit this troop."
"Halt!"
Shouts were passed forward and back, the column ground to an uneven stop. "They can't be allowed to find us and report back," Steiger said, placing his hands on his hips. "I don't believe we will be able to outrun them. This means we must ambush the bastards. Hollocks and Pazulo, I want 20 of your best archers. Tiro, select 40 men who still have enough in them for a fight. No shields, please, but I want spears. The rest of the column will continue on. Hollocks, you will lead the column to Fort Covenant. I will catch up as soon as I can.
I should join you in this fight."
Hollocks sounded somewhat indignant, as if Steiger had slighted him.
"Hollocks," Steiger said, "this isn't the time for such nonsense. An officer must lead the rest of the column. If there are more cavalry behind this bunch, I will do what I can to hold them for as long as possible. You have to get everyone else to the fort. The more men they have when the time comes, the better. It is the only thing that matters at this point. Fort Covenant must hold until the third arrives. Got that?"
Hollocks thought a moment.
"Yes, all right. I will get them there."
"Good man," Steiger said.
"Pazulo and Varys, you are both with me," Steiger said. "Tiro, you go with Lieutenant Hollocks and render him what assistance you can."
Tiro did not appear to like that too much, but gave Steiger a "yes, sir," just the same.
"Daylight's burning."
Steiger clapped his hands together.
"Let's get moving."
Tiro, Varys, and Pazulo moved out, shouting orders. Hollocks hung back a moment.
"Are you certain about this course of action?"
"Certain? No,"
Steiger said with a short laugh. "But I feel it is the right thing to do."
"You're taking a serious risk," Hollocks said, "especially if there is more than a light troop."
"I know," Steiger said. "Get to the fort. Listen to Tiro, he won't steer you wrong."
"I will do as you ask," Hollocks said.
"Good luck, Steiger. I will see you in a few hours."
"Good fortune to you as well."
Hollocks gave the order for the column to move out, even as Tiro and Pazulo called for the men to step out.
"Sir," Pazulo said, returning to Steiger's side. His archers formed up a few feet away. They were road dusty and appeared just as worn as Steiger's men. Varys was busy organizing those selected from the 7th.
"Tiro," Pazulo lowered his voice slightly, "suggested that you might find my advice of value, sir."
"He did he?
"Yes, sir," Pazulo said. "He did."
"I expect you to give me advice when you see fit," Steiger said. "Even if you know it will displease me, I want to hear it from you. Understand?"
"Yes, sir," Pazulo said.
"Perfectly."
"Let's have it, then. I assume you plan on ambushing the enemy from this spot."
Pazulo gestured from their current position and back to the bend in the road.
"Yes, that is correct," Steiger said.
"Sir, I would advise against placing men on both sides of the road."
Steiger cocked his head to one side, intrigued. He gave a nod for Pazulo to continue.
"If you place my bowmen up the slope and above the road, the natural firing position for them, given the elevation," Pazulo continued, and swung his arm from there toward the downward slope, "any wayward missiles may strike our boys on the other side of the road. I prefer my men not to have to worry about that possibility."
Steiger glanced up the hill and then down the slope across the road, thinking the problem through. Though it would be difficult for a horse to escape that way, it was not impossible. He had been planning on placing a handful of men on the downslope side of the road. Pazulo's reasoning was sound, and it certainly gave him pause for thought.
"That makes sense to me," Steiger said. Relief flashed through Pazulo's eyes.
"Varys,"
Steiger called, seeing that the line of legionaries was almost set.
The corporal jogged over, dodging around a team of mules as the last of the column passed them by. "We're going to keep this simple," Steiger said. Keeping things simple was something that Tiro harped on a lot. "This is how I want the ambush laid out. We will position most of our boys upslope and above the road in two lines, say about 5 feet deep. The brush should conceal us quite well. Pazulo's men will be our first line. Right behind them, I want 20 legionaries in our second line." Steiger turned and pointed up the road. "Just to the north, we will put 10 men off the road and hidden above the bend. The other 10 right down the road, say at 30 yards. Got that so far?" Both Pazulo and Varus nodded. "Good," Steiger said, and turned to face north. "With all our men hidden and out of view, we will let the enemy round the bend. Once they are completely around it, the archers will loose their missiles. The second line will follow up with a volley of short spears before going in to finish off any survivors. When the attack starts, the men positioned at either end of the ambush will close the trap by moving onto the road and neatly blocking any easy exit to the north and south."
"Sounds simple enough, sir," Barris said, to which Pazulo nodded in agreement.
"To be clear, we cannot allow any of the bastards to escape," Steiger said. "Impress that upon the men. If even one rider gets away, we could have that entire regiment on our backs before we can make it safely to the fort. We must get them all."
"What if they ride off and down into the forest?" Pazulo asked.
"The brush is thick," Steiger said. "If any do, they won't be able to move very fast. I'm counting on the archers to hit their marks and my men to finish them off before they can even have a thought on flight. With luck, our ambush will come as a complete surprise."
"My boys will shoot true, sir," Pazulo said. "Don't worry about that."
"Varus, I want you with the north blocking force," Steiger said before glancing around once again. "That position is critical. You must stand your ground. No one can escape."
"You can count on me, sir."
"I know I can."
"Hoot like an owl when you have the enemy in sight."
Steiger glanced around once more, taking a deep breath. He held it a moment before letting it out in a long stream.
"I'm not sure how long we have. Let's get the men into position and hidden while we have the chance."
A short while later, and the men were off the road and into the trees and brush.
"Place your line where you think they will be most effective," Steiger told Pazulo as he climbed the slope of the hill. "You can give the order to fire when you think best."
"Yes, sir."
Steiger moved his legionaries into position right behind the archers, who were sticking arrows point first into the forest floor. Pazulo addressed his men, giving them instruction. Once he had them in position, Steiger walked his line, working his way through the undergrowth, speaking encouragements as he went. Satisfied his men were dressed in a good line, he returned to the center and faced them.
"After the archers shoot," Steiger told them, "I will call for a volley of short spears. Aim for the horses, not the men. I don't want any of the enemy to escape. If one does, I'd rather him be afoot than on horseback. I will order us in right after the toss. Keep your heads and stick it to them good." Steiger paused, considering adding a few rousing words, but in the end decided against it. They were all weary and run down. Despite that, they knew what needed doing. He had said enough.
"Now get down," Steiger ordered, "as close as you can to the ground, and stay there until ordered. No one gets spotted."
Steiger placed himself in the center of his line and lay down on his belly, a man immediately to his left and another to his right. The scent of dirt and vegetation was strong. A moment later, he saw Pazulo's men press themselves down. Pazulo gave Steiger a thumbs up before he too got down and disappeared from view. Nothing happened for some time. Steiger rolled onto his back and looked up at the tree canopy above him. It was a spectacular view. The dwindling light of a cloudless sky was interspersed by leaves that blew in a gentle breeze. It had a calming feeling to it. A bird called, and another answered. But for the coming action, Steiger almost felt at peace. His thoughts turned inward, and he offered up a prayer to the High Father. He asked the great God to spare as many of his men as possible and see them to victory. Satisfied, Steiger finished by commending his spirit into the High Father's keeping. Prayers complete, Steiger lay on his back for some time. He began to ponder on his plan, and wonder if he should have done more
or if he had missed something. Perhaps he should have kept additional men instead of sending them onto the fort. What if there was more than one enemy troop? Or worse, what if the entire regiment was riding up the road? The what-ifs began to plague him, and the peace of the moment fled. He heard the hooting of an owl, which sounded a little out of place before dusk. Steiger abruptly realized it was the signal from Varys. Enemy in sight. He rolled over onto his belly.
"Pass it along,"
Steiger hissed to the men next to him.
"The enemy is in sight."
Steiger strained to hear something, but couldn't. He resisted the urge to look. So he remained where he was, listening. Absently, Steiger began silently counting. When he hit 215, the slow, steady clop of multiple hooves reached his ears. With each passing breath, it got louder. Voices speaking the language of the Riven, at first faint and then much clearer, came from below and along the road, which he could not directly see. Someone down on the road laughed. Another coughed. Pazulo and his men silently rose into a kneeling position, almost as if they had grown from the ground. They raised their bows. As they reached for their arrows, Steiger pulled himself up to a knee. The men beside him did the same, and Steiger's line came up also. Below him, less than 15 feet away, were the blue-cloaked Riven. It was shocking to see the enemy so close, so oblivious to their presence. They were riding their horses, which plodded along in boredom, heads hung with the heat. Each man carried a lance, the points of which occasionally caught a ray of the fading sunlight and glittered wickedly. The enemy had bundles of hay, forage bags, and nets affixed to the rumps of their horses, along with their small, round shields. Steiger counted 16 of the enemy. He glanced to the right, toward the bend, and could see no additional horsemen. Was it a light troop, as Tigard said? He certainly hoped so. There was a loud twang from 20 bows firing in unison. Steiger almost jumped. He had missed Pazulo's silent order to loose. The air was abruptly filled with the sounds of impact, cracks of arrows penetrating armor and flesh. This was immediately followed by screams, cries of agony, and shouts of alarm.
"Loose at will!" Pazulo roared. "Spears!" Steiger called, standing and pulling out his sword.
He glanced along his line as his men came to their feet.
"Aim for the horses! Aim for the horses, boys! Make your toss count!"
Steiger's men grunted as they threw their deadly missiles, which sailed over the heads of Pazulo's bowmen.
"Draw swords!"
Steiger didn't wait to see the results. He held his sword high, even as there was a scattered series of additional twangs from Pazulo's bowmen as they fired down into the enemy. Steiger pointed toward the road with his sword.
"At them!"
Moving through and by Pazulo's line, he led the way forward, his men just steps behind. Once past the bowmen, he picked up his pace and crashed through the undergrowth. Steiger burst from the tree line and emerged into a setting of devastation and chaos. Injured horses screamed, with a number down and kicking wildly about. Spears protruded from several. Riders hung limply from saddles, arrows sticking out of chests, sides, and backs. In some cases, the arrow had penetrated clean through and poked out on both sides. A number of the enemy lay on the ground. It was a slaughter. Despite that, there were several of the enemy still mounted. One rider, unscathed, just 10 feet away, spotted Steiger. He wheeled around and lowered his lance. With no time to formulate a better plan, Steiger ran at the horse, screaming wildly as the rider kicked his heels in and the animal lunged forward, hurtling at him. At the last moment, Steiger dove aside and stabbed his sword into the horse's neck, plunging the blade as deeply as he could. Hot wetness sprayed him in the eyes as the razor-sharp edge of the lance passed within a hair's breadth of his face. Then the horse was passed, and Steiger's sword was violently ripped from his hands. As Steiger crashed hard to the ground, the horse let loose a scream of agony. This was almost immediately followed by a solid thud as the wounded animal lost its footing and went down. Steiger lay on the ground, stunned slightly from the impact. Feet thundered around him as his men arrived and tore into the remains of the troop. Shaking his head, Steiger slowly picked himself up, glanced around, and found that for the most part, barring the enemy wounded, the ambush was already over. A sense of satisfaction settled over him. He had given the enemy another bloody nose, albeit a small one. The pounding of hooves brought his head around. A lone trooper was riding for all he was worth back the way the troop had come. Varys and his legionaries blocked the road. Varys shouted an order, and short spears arced out. One spear hit the horse, two struck the rider in the upper chest, and neatly plucked him from his saddle. He seemed to hang in midair for a heartbeat, as if he were a puppet attached to a string, before he slammed to the ground, kicking up a cloud of dust and dirt. A heartbeat later, the horse, maddened by its injury, crashed into Steiger's men. Bodies flew as the animal ploughed through them before it collapsed several hundred yards beyond. "Great gods," Steiger breathed, heart in his throat. "Great bloody gods." He glanced around to make certain it was all over, and then jogged over. Two of his men were on the ground. They were still. Two others pulled themselves to their feet. As Steiger approached, he saw one of those not moving was his corporal. Legionary Urbus, having dragged himself to his knees, moved to Varys and leaned over him. The other man down, Barath, was clearly dead. His head hung at an unnatural angle. Varys' helmet was badly damaged. Blood covered the corporal's face, though Steiger could not see a wound. It seemed to be leaking out of the helmet and onto the dirt of the road where it pooled. "He's alive, sir," Urbus said, looking up at Steiger. "He breathes." Steiger did not know what to say to that. Varys looked to be in a very bad way. The men gathered around, looking concerned. "This is my fault," Steiger whispered to himself as he knelt by Varys's side. His corporal looked close to death. The pain of the moment almost overcame him. A man was dead because of his orders, and another who had become dear to him was gravely injured. "We have to get this off him, sir," Urbus said, "and examine the wound." Urbus untied Varys's helmet and then carefully removed it, while Steiger supported the corporal's neck. Steiger's hands quickly became slick from blood. Urbus gingerly felt the back of Varys's head, which elicited a groan from the corporal. Varys's eyes popped open, and he attempted to sit up, but Urbus and Steiger held him back. A moment later, Varys lost consciousness and went limp. "Help me turn him on his side, sir," Urbus said. Steiger rolled the corporal over. Urbus studied the back of Varys's head. After a prolonged moment, he sat back and breathed a sigh of relief. "He's got a nasty bump," Urbus said. They rolled the corporal onto his back. "I think he should live, sir." "What of all the blood?" "A scalp wound. I'm not a surgeon, but it doesn't seem too bad. The skull under the cut seems sound enough," Urbus explained. "Cuts on the head tend to bleed a lot, sir." "Right," Steiger said, standing. He studied Barath and felt a wave of exhaustion and sadness overtake him. Barath had been a good legionary, always doing as asked, with no disciplinary issues. He had not deserved to die like this, run down by a maddened animal. "How is Varys?" Steiger looked over, blinking. It took him a moment to realize that Pazulo stood before him. Steiger sucked in a shaky breath and cleared his throat. "Urbus says he should live." "That's good news," Pazulo said. "It was a fine ambush, sir." Steiger looked down the road. A couple of horses walked aimlessly about as his men and Pazulo's looted the dead. "Any other injuries?" "No, sir," Pazulo said, glancing down. "Just these two." "That's good," Steiger said, a little dazed by what had occurred. He rubbed at his eyes a moment and told himself it was only exhaustion. "That's good." "I think we should get moving, sir." There was a hard edge to the sergeant's tone, before more of the enemy come down that road. "Yes, of course," Steiger said, snapping back to his duty. He felt somewhat guilty that Pazulo had needed to remind him. "Urbus, get Varys on one of those horses. Barath comes too. We have to go." "Yes, sir," Urbus said. "I will see to it, sir." "Pazulo, get the men formed up." "Yes, sir." Steiger looked around. He had lost his sword. He spotted it down the road, still sticking out of the horse he had stuck. With a glance at the injured Varys, Steiger made his way over to the deceased animal. The rider lay a few feet away, lying on his stomach. A sword thrust to the back of the neck had ended him. Varys's injury and Barath's death weighing heavily upon him, Steiger blew out a heavy breath. As the men formed up, he pulled his sword free. It was time to move on. Chapter 13.
"That is a very welcome sight," Steiger said, and he meant it. Under the light of a full moon and cloudless sky, he and Pazulo were gazing down into a large valley. To their backs were the forest and the men. In the center of the valley, around a half-mile distant, stood a large square fort. Steiger could see the sentry fires and torches flickering in the distance. Each of the four walls was easily 600 yards in length, with covered towers on each corner. Off farther to the south, Steiger could see the lights of what he assumed was a small town. "A sight for sore eyes."
"It sure is, sir," Pazulo said, and then cleared his throat. "I think it might be better to admire the fort from the inside, don't you think, sir?"
"I completely agree," Steiger said. He turned to look behind at the weary column of men, which snaked back into the forest along the road. "Forward march." The column started forward again, with Steiger and Pazulo moving alongside. Steiger was exhausted. His legs trembled slightly with each step, and he now had a persistent headache. He longed to lie down and catch up on some sleep. What kept him going was the example he felt compelled to set for his men. In a way, as long as he kept going, so too would the company. There were times he felt as if he were their willpower. They covered the distance rapidly, following the road, moving down the hill, and into the valley. With nightfall, the hot temperatures had finally eased. With the setting sun had come light gusts of wind. The cooler temperatures were more than welcome, and made the long march just a tad bit easier. Fields of wheat ready for harvest spread out to either side of the road. The wind rippled through the fields like ocean waves. Under the bright moonlight, it was a ghostly scene. Steiger was reminded of the man he had set afire during the assault back at Kora Tol, an image he would not soon forget, one he knew he would carry to the end of his days. He felt immense relief as they neared the front gate. Placing one foot in front of the other was becoming a real effort. His men were in a similar state. Steiger was so tired now, he felt as if his mind had become shrouded by a thick fog. Even so, he noticed that despite the late hour, the fort's gate stood fully open. At night, the procedure called for the gate to be sealed.
"There seems to be a lot of activity inside," Palooza said as they crossed a wooden planked bridge that ran over a deep defensive trench with steep sides.
Steiger glanced over the side and saw spikes and obstacles below.
"An awful lot of activity, sir." Now that Pazulo mentioned it, Steiger could hear quite the commotion coming from inside the fort. It sounded as if the garrison were being called out.
"I'm sure that Hollux's arrival got their attention, if not the dispatch ride from Ida first," Steiger said. Pazulo did not reply to that. His eyes were on the four files of auxiliaries waiting before the gate, formed up into two lines. An officer stood to the right of the formation. He spoke to a man and sent him running into the fort.
"What do you suppose that was all about?"
Steiger asked Pazulo, as he and his men began crossing the second and final defensive trench. Steiger's boots rang with a hollow sound on the planking.
"Dunno, sir," Pazulo said. "They couldn't have just spotted us. Under this moon, we would have been visible clear up to the top of the hill."
Steiger rubbed his jaw. He considered the situation as the distance closed. Pazulo was correct. Steiger and his men could not have been missed, especially with the news that had preceded them. The garrison would have lookouts scanning the darkness for any hint of the enemy. The auxiliary officer stepped out into the road and before his formation. He held his hand up, signaling for Steiger to halt his men. For some reason Steiger could not identify, he was irritated by the man's manner, which was almost arrogant. So Steiger decided to close the distance further. Ominously, the sergeant behind the officer snapped an order. The auxiliaries raised their shields, the bottoms of which had been resting upon the ground. Irritated by their reception, Steiger waited until he and his men were almost on top of the auxiliary officer, a youthful lieutenant, before he called out a terse halt.
"Identify yourself,"
the officer demanded, in a haughty manner that dripped with hostility.
"Lieutenant Steiger, 7th Company, 3rd Legion."
Steiger was surprised at the other's tone.
"And who, sir, are you?"
"Lieutenant Tried,"
came the curt reply,
You are to remain here. I have sent for Tribune Declan.
Now listen here, Steiger snarled, stepping nearer the man. I don't know what your game is, but...
I have my orders, Tried said.
He pointed at the ground. Though his tone was firm enough, Steiger thought he detected a little unease.
You are to wait here.
Steiger ground his teeth in frustration as he swung toward Pazulo with a questioning look. Pazulo gave a rough shrug.
Sir, Pazulo said, drawing Steiger's attention toward the fort. A man in a richly cut tunic had emerged, clearly the tribune. The line of auxiliaries parted to let him through. He was flanked by another officer, this one wearing the armor of a prefect, and three large auxiliaries. Steiger felt Pazulo stiffen at his side and guessed this was Hollux's commanding officer, Prefect Lears. The Lears family were no friends of the Steigers, nearly outright enemies.
"Steiger, I presume?"
the tribune asked. Steiger offered a salute to the tribune, who waved it away.
"Yes, sir," Steiger said. "You are Tribune Declan?"
"I am."
The tribune walked right up to Steiger and gave him a hard look. Steiger read a deep, burning anger in the man's eyes and sensed danger.
"You, son," the tribune said, biting off each word, "have a lot to answer for."
"Excuse me, sir. I am afraid I don't understand."
"Your orders."
The tribune held out an expectant hand.
"What?"
Steiger's tired mind attempted to grapple with a situation that was threatening to spiral out of control.
"You have orders?" the tribune asked. "Come on, man, I don't have all night."
"Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir," Steiger said. "My orders come from General Treem."
"Well, then," Declan said, "let's see them."
"I'm sorry, sir," Steiger said, face flushing. "I'm afraid I destroyed them back at Cor Atoll."
"To what end?"
"I did not want them to fall into the hands of the enemy, sir," Steiger said. "General Treem made it plain I was to destroy them if necessary."
Tribune Declan eyed Steiger for a few heartbeats, then made a point of slowly looking him over. Steiger knew his appearance was dreadful and very unlegionary. With a look of contempt, the tribune's gaze returned to Steiger's face.
"You're a disgrace, sir," the tribune said. "An utter disgrace and a poor excuse for an officer."
Steiger said nothing, though he very much desired to rebut the statement.
"Just as I had surmised, sir," the prefect said, drawing the tribune's attention. "He is operating without orders."
Steiger felt his mouth fall open. Surely the tribune did not think that. Did they truly believe he was without honor?
"Sergeant,"
the tribune said to Pazulo, "step aside." The sergeant did as he was bid, casting a sidelong glance at Steiger that was filled with worry.
"What is going on here?"
Steiger, having recovered from his surprise, rapidly became angry. With the onset of his anger, the exhaustion fled.
"I am operating under the direct orders of General Treem."
"If you were," the tribune said, "then you would have your orders."
"I don't need written orders," Steiger said. "The general gave me my orders himself, personally."
"And what were they?"
The tribune's eyebrows rose, as if he were dealing with a small child telling a fib.
"I want to hear what great task the general set for you, that you needed to be dispatched so far from the action."
"I was to travel to Cor Atoll and take Lieutenant Agger into custody, sir."
The tribune shared a meaningful glance with the prefect. They both turned their gazes, far from friendly, upon Steiger.
"The general could have sent a messenger," Declan said. "I would have easily been able to apprehend Agger if required. Why send you instead?"
"Those were my orders, sir."
"Is that so?"
the prefect asked.
"It is," Steiger said. "Upon my honor, it is."
"Why was Agger to be detained?"
"I was not privy to that," Steiger said. "I was to locate the lieutenant, secure the prisoner, and return him to the headquarters for questioning."
"Then your orders don't mention commandeering the Fort Footprint garrison, do they?"
the tribune asked.
"The enemy is coming," Steiger countered. "When I could not find Agger and learned of the threat, I took the initiative. It was the only sensible thing to do."
"Really?"
The tribune cocked his head to the side.
"We must concentrate all available forces here, sir, where there is the chance of holding off the enemy," Steiger said. "I could not leave them behind to be slaughtered."
"And what of Fort Ida?"
Declan's eyes narrowed. Why are they not with you?
Lieutenant Tevis refused to give up his fort, Steiger said. I gave him the chance, but he refused.
I see.
Declan sucked in a deep breath.
Well, at least one of my officers has some sense.
Remaining to fight and die for nothing does not strike me as very sensible, sir. By rights, he should have come with us, especially when I ordered him to do so.
You freely admit to exceeding your orders, then?
There was a sense of triumph in Declan's tone.
Very well. I have heard enough. Prefect Lears, you may arrest Lieutenant Steiger.
Steiger took a step back and glanced between the two officers. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. Were they mad? Were they so out of touch? It did not seem possible.
Lears motioned his men forward. Steiger took another step backwards. Behind him there was a commotion. Swords were drawn. Steiger's men began moving forward toward the auxiliaries, who suddenly checked their advance.
"Now, Lieutenant Steiger," Declan said, "don't make this worse than it is. I will not hesitate to order the slaughter of your men."
With swords drawn and shields out, Steiger's men meant business. Even Pazulo's men had raised their bows, arrows at the ready. Steiger's gaze swung back on Declan and the auxiliaries, who appeared somewhat uncertain, but had also drawn their swords. He wasn't so sure it would be as one-sided as the tribune had suggested. Steiger was moved by the loyalty of his men. Despite that, and even for his own sake, he could not allow them to shed imperial blood. He was simply not his father. Steiger was certain this was a terrible misunderstanding on the tribune's part. He was confident that when tempers cooled, he would be shown innocent, and the tribune would take his news seriously.
"Stand down," Steiger said. His men did not move. He hardened his voice. "I said, stand down. Now."
Reluctantly, swords were sheathed, and the men moved back and away from him.
"I would not have enjoyed ordering the deaths of your men," Declan said.
"Prefect Lears, if you would."
"Take him," Lears snapped, seeming to relish giving the order.
The three auxiliaries who had accompanied the tribune and prefect moved forward. Each of Steiger's arms was seized in a vice-like grip. His sword and dagger were removed. He was roughly searched for other weapons.
"There is an army on the march," Steiger said, directing himself to the tribune.
"It's coming here. I sent word to the general. With luck, the third is already on her way."
"Lieutenant Hollocks informed me of your actions," Declan said in a sad tone. "You should know I have already dispatched a note to your general, advising him that we are dealing with raiding parties you mistook for more, something my men are fully capable of handling."
"You can't be serious, sir," Steiger exclaimed.
"I am," the tribune said with a sneer. "Take him from my sight."
The men began to drag Steiger into the fort.
"But, sir," Steiger said as he was pulled past, "I took an important prisoner. He will confirm what I have told you. Ask him."
"Stop," the tribune called, and then walked up to Steiger.
"I interviewed your Lieutenant Kreef, and I can assure you he is quite mad. Whatever he has told you is purely nonsense. Nothing of value can be gained from that man.
How do you explain the Riven heavy infantry that we attacked at Kor Atoll, or the enemy cavalry, sir? They are not figments of my imagination."
"Listen here, Steiger."
Acid dripped from the tribune's tongue as he spoke.
"You are a traitor's son. In my mind, you are no better than a dog. I don't care what your initial orders contained, but I can tell you that I will get to the bottom of it, and when I do, you shall hang as your father should have. I would rather trust Lieutenant Agger, whom I view as a second son, than the likes of you. Now take him from my sight."
"You are making a mistake," Steiger yelled back as he was dragged into the fort.
"There is a Riven army coming. Don't be a fool. You are making a mistake."
A cohort was assembling on the parade ground. Steiger saw that activity ceased as all eyes turned their way.
"You made the mistake," Prefect Lears said, walking alongside as Steiger was dragged roughly along. "You are nothing more than a filthy bastard, no better than a mad dog."
Steiger struggled to break free, but the hold on him was simply too strong. The third man came up from behind, grabbed Steiger's hair painfully, and forced his head forward so he was looking at the ground. Steiger managed to catch a glimpse of Tiro and a few of his men watching from the barracks doorway, and then he was passed. A few moments later, they entered a building that smelled bad and was poorly lit by a single lantern.
The man from behind still had a firm grip on his hair, keeping Steiger's gaze fixed onto the battered wooden floor. It was badly in need of a sweeping. He heard a rattle of keys and the mechanism of a lock turning. The grip on his hair was released. Steiger looked up and found he was in a small, single-room building with three metal-barred cells. The cell door he was standing before was opened, and he was thrown inside. He landed in a tumble on the wood-planked floor. Before he could pull himself to his feet, Prefect Lears entered the cell and knelt down beside him. A fist from the prefect slammed into Steiger's jaw. For a moment, Steiger saw white, and then his vision cleared. He reached up to his jaw, which hurt something awful.
"How dare you?"
Lears hissed, voice shaking with ill-concealed rage.
"How dare you order the burning of my fort? When it comes time to stretch your neck, I promise you I will be in the first row to watch. Perhaps I shall even volunteer to assist the hangman. Won't that be a kindness?"
"There is an army coming," Steiger said, tasting blood from a split lip. It ran down his chin and dripped onto the floor.
"There is no army," Lears spat. "There are only raiders, you dumb fool. We've seen their likes before in these parts. You allowed your imagination to get the better of you. Now I have to go and rectify the damage you've done."
Lears sucked in a breath and released it. "Since my cohort is exhausted from the march here, because my fool lieutenant was taken in by your madness, I have to take one of the Covenant cohorts to put this raid down."
"Don't go," Steiger said. "Please listen to me. You..."
Lears punched him again. The force of the blow caused the side of Steiger's head to slam into the floor. Steiger found he was dazed for a moment and struggled to regain his wits. Lears stood.
"I shall return to watch you hang."
Lears stepped out of the cell. "The Tribune has promised me that singular honor. All I have to do is beat back the enemy raiding parties, and you are mine. It's nothing I've ever had a problem doing before, and shouldn't prove to be much of a challenge."
Steiger sat up as the door to his cell was closed and locked.
Lears chuckled darkly.
"You know, even if you had served honorably, and had been falsely accused, I would still have been in the front row to watch you hang. You understand? Family business. But a pleasure just the same." "You are a fool," Steiger spat out blood.
"Maybe so, maybe not. But you both shall hang nonetheless." With that, the prefect left. Lears looked back once, smiling as the outer door was closed. Steiger got to his feet. He heard a scuffling off to his side. He glanced around and spotted Hollocks in the cell next over, looking rather miserable. There was no one else with them in the jailhouse.
"Fancy meeting you here," Steiger said.
"I'm going to hang," Hollocks said numbly.
"No, I don't think you will."
Steiger began untying his armor.
"How can you say that?"
Hollocks stood.
"Oh," Steiger shrugged out of his armor. "I think the Riven will get here before they have a chance to put the hangman's noose around our necks. In the end, I shall be proven right."
"Really?" Hollocks looked suddenly hopeful.
"Do you think so?"
"I am certain." Steiger placed his armor carefully against the bars of the cell and then laid down on his bench. He gingerly touched his split lip, which still freely bled.
"To be honest, I don't think it will help us very much."
"What?" Hollocks stepped up to the bars, gripping them.
"The Riven will be the ones that get us,"
Steiger said, and let out a heavy breath. "Tribune Declan has sent a message to General Treem that will see the Third turn back." Steiger paused and felt his jaw where Lears had struck him. It ached terribly, but what hurt even more was the knowledge that all of his efforts had come to naught. He glanced at Hollocks.
"We shall die all right, but at the hands of the enemy."
Using his arms for a pillow, Steiger closed his eyes.
"What are we going to do?"
"At the moment," Steiger said, "nothing much. If I am to die, then I intend to do it well rested."
"Sleep?"
Hollocks fairly screeched.
"You are going to sleep?"
"Yes, and I would appreciate it if you kept it down," Steiger said. "It's been a good long while since I've had a full night's sleep, and I intend on getting it." With that, he surrendered and allowed blissful oblivion to overtake him.
Chapter 14
"All you do is sleep," Hollux said, sounding thoroughly put out.
Stagger cracked open an eye and turned his head to look over at Hollux, who was sitting on the bench in his own cell. Without a fire, the small jailhouse was cold with the early morning chill. They had passed an uncomfortable night with only their tunics for warmth.
"So?" Stagger asked. "What's your point?"
"It's been 2 days," Hollux said, the frustration leaking into his voice. "We've been stuck here for 2 entire days.
"So?"
Giving up on the idea of further sleep, he sat up.
"What else is there to do?
Besides, I have not gotten this much sleep in weeks." Stiger yawned, stretching.
"I feel fully rested. You know, it might not be a bad thing to get locked up now and again."
Hollux shook his head in disgust.
"How can you joke at a time like this?"
"It's about one of the few things we are free to do at the moment," Stiger said.
"Get it? Free?"
"This sitting around is driving me mad." Hollux stood and began pacing his small cell.
"I want out."
"I didn't realize that you were so eager to greet the hangman," Stiger said, letting slip a slight grin.
"That or the Riven, whoever comes first."
Hollux chuckled, finally giving in to the black humor. He stopped pacing.
"Anything seems better than just sitting here. They only come in once a day to give us food. We've had no visitors. It's boring."
"Are you saying my company is tedious?"
"Don't start that again," Hollux said.
"Seriously, all we've been able to do is talk."
"It has afforded us time to become better acquainted," Stiger said.
Though Hollux was at least 10 years his senior, Stiger felt like the older lieutenant was his junior in age. The man talked incessantly, a byproduct of his nervousness at their current condition. Despite that, Stiger found Hollux an affable fellow who was honest almost to a fault.
"I've learned more about you and your family," Stiger said. "Your father is an honorable man, your mother a lovely woman. They had 2 sons and a daughter. Your brother,
Stiger snapped his fingers. "Turgener stayed home to help run your family's interests. And you've told me all about your sister Amelis, whom you adore. Her marriage to that Mechlin fellow, a good prospect that turned out not to be so respectable.
He's a real bastard, I think is how you put it."
Hollux spared him a rueful look, but refused to be drawn out. Stiger pursed his lips as he contemplated his fellow prisoner. He had learned that, as he had expected, Hollux had not thrived in the legions. Hollux had been transferred to the auxiliaries, where he finally found a place, but in Stiger's estimation, not a home. Unable to advance, Hollux had settled in, seeking nothing more than to complete his service and obtain his pension. He was an embarrassment to his father, who had effectively disowned him.
"You have told me so little about yourself," Hollux said suddenly, turning it back on Stiger.
"Your father, next to the Emperor, is the most famous man in the Empire."
"Infamous is more like it," Stiger said, suddenly feeling uncomfortable.
"During the Civil War, he defeated army after army," Hollux said in a tone that was somewhat awed.
"I've studied his exploits."
"Only to lose in the end," Stiger said quietly.
"His battles have become legend," Hollux said. "It must have been glorious to see."
"Glorious," Stiger said, glancing down at the floor and shaking his head slowly.
"I don't think so. Glory is a word that those who have not known combat freely bandy about."
Hollux did not look convinced by that.
"What was it like growing up under such a man?" Hollux asked. "It must have been incredible."
"It was far from that," Stiger said, thinking back upon his childhood, the latter end of which he viewed as an unhappy time. "My father is a hard, unforgiving man."
Hollux was silent for several heartbeats.
"I think there is some of him in you."
"Perhaps," Stiger said.
And though he wished to deny it, he understood the truth in those words. He was very much like his father.
"Come on. It could not have been all that bad," Hollux said. "I've heard you were the childhood playmate of our Emperor. Is that true?"
Stiger nodded, feeling even more uncomfortable with the turn of the conversation. "After the war, it was likely the only reason my family was spared. That and my mother was the Emperor's sister."
Stiger paused, the hurt at her loss pulling at his heart. "She did not make it through the war."
Oh, Hollock said, a little lamely. I am sorry. I did not know.
Steiger looked up at Hollock's and saw that he was sincere.